This is episode 130 for the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, interviewing Rob and Will.
The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith.
Hi, I'm Mariut Simura. I'm a student from LaGuardia Community College, a journalist student who is working on a project about Medicaid fraud in nursing homes.
And hi, I'm Zilla Tofty. I'm Mariutzi's fellow student from LaGuardia Community College. Together, we're working with the Gardner Schenker Foundation Fellowship in collaboration with the LaGuardia Community College Wagner Archives on a project about mistreatment and fraud in the nursing home and elderly care system.
Wow, and I feel honored we're being interviewed on our own show by these two ladies on a very important topic. So we're excited. The script has been flipped on us. We're now the interviewees, not the interviewers. So, ladies, welcome to the show. We welcome ourselves to the show, I guess. I don't know how I would say that, but awesome. Looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you for speaking to us. It's a fellowship that our school has with the Gardner Schenker Foundation, and it's in collaboration with the school's archives as well.
Okay.
So this semester, the school, or last semester, the school received a collection of works from a New York Times journalist, female journalist called Edith Evans Asbury, and it was pretty much like all of her raw documents that she had, like handwritten notes, typewritten papers, like all the things that she had when she was a journalist during the 1960s, 1970s, and I think a bit of the 1980s at the New York Times. The school received all of this work, and they were like, okay, they picked a bunch of students and they were like, okay, you guys go through this work and whatever topic seems interesting to you, you have a year to do a research project about it, write articles, like make videos, whatever form you want your project to take, it can. So me and Mariutzi both were really interested in the work Edith did on nursing homes and like the fraud and mistreatment in New York. So we both wrote articles about it, and now this semester we decided to merge our projects and make a podcast.
Okay.
That's fantastic. Yeah, good for you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. We're speaking to like a few lawyers on the topic, and then you guys are obviously like amazing to speak about because you have the podcast about abuse. And and we're speaking to some people who have stories, some carers that have experience with mistreatment and fraud. So it's just going to be like, I think it's going to be about 5 or 6 episodes, and it's going to be almost like a collection of work that we then gift to the archives and they can put it in their documents. And yeah, it'll be there for history.
And so what was this this journalist's name again?
Her name is Edith Evans Asbury.
Okay.
I'll have to check that out.
And she was writing about the subject in what decade? The 60s and 70s?
She was in the 1970s, especially 1975. She wrote a lot, like she wrote extensively, because there was like a bunch of stories that came out about Medicare and Medicaid in New York.
It was basically like a scandal that occurred in the 1975, like about fraud and mistreatment. A lot of nursing homes here in New York were closed because of deficiencies and, you know, all the thing in the care system.
During Reagan's presidency and during the 100th session of Congress in 1987, they passed this huge administrative law called the Omnibus Reconciliation Act. It was OBRA. And there's a bunch of different parts to it. There are things that have to do with farm subsidies. There are things that have to do with student loan payments. And then there's this one thing in Subtitle C that has to do with nursing homes. And it was the first time that there was real regulation and the setting forth of standards for long-term care settings. And prior to that, especially during the time that she was writing in the 1970s, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the movie and a book as well, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but it's...
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's where we get in the U.S., we get this trope or this term, you know, Nurse Ratched, describing a terrible healthcare worker with horrible bedside manner, because back in that time, mental health facilities, long-term care settings, and even some types of acute care hospitals had no regulation. It was the Wild West, and the care for the patients and the residents was awful. It was truly terrible. I mean, it's bad now, clearly. And I say clearly because our entire business is based on suing nursing homes for negligence. But before the Omnibus Reconciliation Act of 1987, it was terrible. It was really a nightmare. I mean, they were taking these elderly residents and mental health patients and getting paid, you know, from Medicaid and Medicare with just no oversight. So you had people that were just completely abandoned and neglected and mistreated. I can only imagine the things that she saw and wrote about. It must have been awful.
Yeah. And so in that statute, the Ober statute we use in our cases, because we'll go in a deposition or in trial testimony, you say, are you familiar with OBRA? And they have to say yes, because if they accept Medicare or Medicaid funding, they have to follow those rules. And then we set the rule to them and we show them the facts of how they didn't meet that rule. So that's, you know, that the OBRA legislation came after years and years of advocacy by different organizations, even though we haven't heard of that author, I'm sure that she had something to do with that as well. But it was many years in the making to get that legislation passed, and we still use it to this day.
Oh yeah, people like her definitely affected change, because they brought light to an area of darkness. I mean, when I say that there was negligence, it pales. What happens today pales in comparison. It was not just negligence, but you can imagine, I'm sure if you look at her notes, that it was essentially torture. They had no concern for the residents' rights, their health, their safety. I can only imagine it was a truly awful situation.
Wow, I have never even heard of this statute before. Like, definitely, I think people like her writing about these kind of like issues helped pass this statute eventually.
Yeah, I get.
But yeah, like if we look at her notes, it's like letters that people sent her about, oh my God, like horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And let's see here. The Ken Kesey is the one who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So it was, this is something worth looking into as well, because in addition to being, you know, just a great work of literature and an amazing movie with Jack Nicholson, it really did highlight what life was like inside. This one in particular is a mental health facility, but there's little difference at this time between mental health facilities and certain long-term care settings.
Yeah, one Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I think, was required reading when I was a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, and like I said, it's where we get that term Nurse Ratched, you know, somebody that just doesn't care about the patients, is very mean. There were no residents' rights. OBRA, one of the first things that OBRA did is establish that residents have certain rights, because prior to this, you know, I mean, certainly they had rights as U.S. citizens and as humans, but they weren't elucidated anywhere, and they certainly weren't enforced.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. We just definitely have to check out that movie. And also, who wouldn't want to see Jack Nicholson?
And it's okay. Early. It's early Jack Nicholson, and it really is an iconic movie. You have to check it. You have to check it out. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I can't remember. I think Milos Forman directed it, but I'm not sure.
So what are some of the things, and not to take over the conversation, but what are some of the things that you guys have uncovered or have learned in researching and talking to attorneys and other persons about their stories in nursing homes? Like, what are some things that, maybe surprised you or, you didn't know about?
Well, for me, last semester, my project was more on the mistreatment side, and Mariuzzi worked more on the medical fraud. Mm-hmm. But I think the two topics are like very closely interwoven with each other.
Sure.
So, it just makes sense for us to merge it this semester. But I mean, we looked through the same documents from Edith all mm-hmm. of last semester, and, some of the stories that people had written to her about were like, one woman went to visit her mom after she had been in a nursing home here in New York, I think 2 months. And she came to the nursing home and her mom was sitting outside in the garden and she was supposed to be having her lunch, mm-hmm. but she was severely undernourished and she had lost a lot of weight. She had like the woman says she had a blank stare in her eyes, like she didn't recognize me anymore. And flies were zooming around her head and her food. Mm. And like that's such a like scarring image. I can't imagine going to a nursing home where you leave your mom and you come and she doesn't recognize you and this is what you see. And there's a lot of other stories also about nursing homes just refusing family members time. Yeah. So if they wanted to come and take their family members out of the nursing home for like an overnight stay or a trip, the nursing home would say, no, they have to stay here. Or you have to give 2 weeks notice. And Mariuzzi found out that actually that could have been because the Medicaid and the Medicare pays per night for a patient in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. So every night that they're not in the nursing home, the nursing home loses money.
Yeah. And that's actually an issue even today, because we've had several cases where a nursing home did not send a resident to the hospital, even though they needed to, simply because, as you said, every night that they don't spend in the nursing home is a night that the nursing home doesn't get money. So the hospital gets the money.
Right. So,
I can imagine that back then it was
even worse.
Even worse. Yeah.
One of the questions that we really wanted to ask you guys is, in your opinion and in your experience as mistreatment and neglect lawyers, what do you think and what do you see are like the major issues in like day-to-day life of the residents of nursing homes and the carers working in nursing homes?
Well, I don't recall if you and I discussed this, but I actually worked in a nursing home as a nurse's assistant for 8 years. And
yes, I heard that on the podcast.
and my job, I didn't pass out medicine. I didn't give them treatment. What my job was is to help them get up, help them get dressed, help them eat, take them to the bathroom, clean them, give them a shower, because essentially a lot of these people cannot do those things completely independently. And one of the major problems that we have is that this job is horribly understaffed. And when you don't have enough people like doing what I did on a floor with residents, then you can imagine that a lot of them don't get up at the right time. They don't take the shower when they need to. There isn't somebody there to assist them to the bathroom. There isn't somebody there to turn them back and forth, and that's how they develop bed sores. So staffing is probably one of the number one problems in this industry, and it directly, immediately affects the quality of lives of the residents.
Yeah, in fact, CMS over and over again, and recently as early as earlier this year had a memo stating that the amount of hours that a nurse puts their hands on the residents and the amount of staff that is available at any given time is one of the, if not the most important, a very important factor in the quality of the life of the nursing home resident.
Yeah. Now, there are a lot of other issues that nursing homes are dealing with. And one of those is, for example, not related to staffing. I guess everything is somewhat related to staffing, is the use of restraints. And this has become a hot button topic because there are certain circumstances in which somebody may be physically restrained. You'll have somebody that has a lap belt on them or something to that in that vein that prevents them from harming themselves or harming others. And what tends to happen is because there is understaffing, it's convenient to overuse physical restraints. And what ends up happening is you have people who are physically restrained just because it makes it easier for the staff to deal with them. They also have chemical restraints, which are the administration of certain psychotropic drugs that make people lethargic, that make them tired and sleepy so that they're easier to deal with. But again, it all relates back to staffing because they don't have enough staff. It just makes it easier for them to commit these abuses.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So, and you say that this issue of staff and everything, who is usually in charge of control this situation?
So these, every nursing home is a company. It is a corporation of some sort. It's a company. It's an LLC. It's a corporation or whatever legal fiction each individual state has. It's the corporate bigwigs. It's the people in suits that are looking at the budget, that are trying to shave corners, and make a bigger profit. And so they'll see just how much staff they have to have versus how often they get sued for not having enough staff, and they consider it the cost of doing business. But it's the men in suits. It's not necessarily the staff. It's not the director.
Right. It's not like Lisa was sick and couldn't come to work, and that's why they're understaffed. This is an institutional problem. Mm-hmm. And as Will stated, our view is that it is due to the purpose of any corporation, good or bad, is for profit, and you can make more profit by cutting corners and not having the appropriate level of staff needed to provide a reasonable amount of quality care.
Yeah, it's a money-making racket, and that hasn't changed since the time that Edith was doing this investigation in the 1970s to now. I mean, we have more regulation, but they are constantly fighting against this. And with with each administration, because the Department of Health and Human Services is under the purview of the executive branch. So when you get a new president, things can change one way or the other. And not to get political, but I can tell you that the Obama administration had a different perspective on the nursing home industry than the current administration. So a lot of things changed January that year when Trump took over. It's certainly in other words, it is way more favorable to the industry than it is the resident currently.
Yes, we actually spoke about this the other day with each other, about how the fine, like regulations around fines for the nursing homes are changing. And it seems that under the current administration, they're getting a lot more lax about like violation fines. It seems like they're now fining people almost on like a per violation basis, mm-hmm. instead of a per day basis, that I believe it was like under the Obama administration.
Right,
right. So you could the amount of the fine and how a fine could be levied has been more relaxed under, or is attempting to be more relaxed under this administration. The administration is trying to argue that when you go into a nursing home, you could spot five or six different violations that might just have been a one-time, quote-unquote, freak occurrence that could shut the nursing home down, and that's not fair if you run a nursing home. And that's kind of their position. So they want to be able to say, there should not be any type of incident that just happens one time that should be able to be fined or shut the nursing home down, this type of thing. It should be over, two or three times over the course of, however many months, then you can levy a fine or shut us down, that kind of thing. It's a give and take. And right now the industry is receiving, I guess, I don't know, give or taking a lot of the,
And even the implementation of regulations is being delayed because at the behest of the nursing home industry, who has found a more favorable executive administration than they currently had, they're going to them, with their crocodile tears and saying, look, we can't keep up with all this regulation and still make a profit. We'd like to postpone the enforcement of some of these regulations while we try to work this out internally. And the current administration has been very amenable to that, at the cost of residents' safety, health, and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in regards to if... So you spoke about the restraints, right? Like chemical restraints and actual physical restraints.
Right.
And there's a lot more. I mean, we all know there's a lot more like different forms of abuse going on and mistreatment going on in nursing homes. If, say, a family member or a nurse spotted a case like this and wants to bring it up to a higher power or to just report the problem, what would be the best way that they can go about doing that? Like, who should they speak to first?
Well, all the staff in these situations, at least in Georgia, and this is, varies from state to state, they're mandated reporters. So when they witness, neglect, to a certain level or neglect or abuse, they have to report it. And who they report it to, I'd say if you're, bring it up to the individual who's known here as the director of nursing or the administrator. But you can always contact the Department of Community Health or the Department of Health and Human Services.
That's in the state of Georgia. If your loved one is in a nursing home in the state of Georgia, your first call, depending on the severity of the incident, would be to call the police. But if it's something that the police won't handle, which is most of the time, unless it's some type of egregious act or assault, then you would call the whatever agency. Every state has an agency that oversees healthcare. Institutions, and Georgia happens to be the Department of Community Health. In New York, I'm not quite sure, but you would call that department and open a complaint. And generally, what would happen is that a surveyor would come and do an investigation or something like that. So that's the second call I'd make after the police. You would call whatever your regulatory body is that oversees it. And then every state also has what are called ombudsmen, long-term care ombudsman. Ombudsman is a Swedish word. Meaning what was it?
Advocate,
meaning advocate. And so the ombudsman in every state, they're a lot of times volunteers, but you file a complaint with them and they also can go in and advocate on behalf of that resident. But like Will said, if it's something that,
and it looks like it's the New York State Department of Health.
Yeah.
The Georgia one's Department of Community Health, the federal one is the Department of Health and Human Services, but some regulatory body or advocate.
Yeah. So those are the calls that you can make. But if it's something that's, you know, Mrs. Johnson or whoever it is not getting the food that she needs or whatever, if something like that, then I think that going to the staff with that, going to the director of nursing, maybe even scheduling it, you know, whenever the next care plan meeting is, going and advocating on behalf of your loved one. But if it's something else, then yeah, you call the police, call a regulatory agency, call the ombudsman.
And the main thing is follow up. Don't just say, tell somebody that something's going on, if this is your loved one, and go, okay, well, I hope that's resolved. Make sure that it's resolved, because enforcement of residents' rights is an ongoing issue, and it's difficult.
Yeah. So when these major issues happens, like, and you know, there is this misconception that people have fear if they report a case. So when people whistleblow a case of fraud or mistreatment, are there any consequences that they usually face?
And you also bring up something else that we forgot to mention. There are other things that can be reported that may not directly physically impact a resident. And one of those is fraud, and Medicare and Medicaid fraud is an enormous issue, and that's something that you would report to the local prosecutor's office, or maybe even CMS,
or the senior Medicare patrol,
or the senior medical care patrol,
who we've had on the podcast. We've had the Georgia representative of the senior Medicare patrol, as well as the actual in DC, the U.S. representative of the. And that's a body that kind of receives tips on Medicare fraud.
But that gives us, you know, two different people that we're working with here as far as retaliation. When it comes to family members and residents making a complaint, clearly they're going to be worried about the staff retaliating against them or the nursing home. But you know, that is very much unlawful. I mean, without question, that's unlawful. And in all honesty, I don't know that it happens as much as people fear. I think that in my experience, once you make a complaint, the staff is very wary of exacerbating the situation. As far as the staff themselves whistleblowing and reporting, what they consider to be bad behavior by the company, that's going to depend on whatever federal or state laws apply and how they define retaliation. You know, can you get fired if you complain that your boss is milking Medicaid or Medicare? Probably not. I mean, you know, but it's going to depend on what whistleblower laws apply in your state.
Yeah. But again, as a general standpoint, if the concern is, if I report abuse or neglect of my loved one, are they going to abuse or neglect him or her more? Anecdotally, as Will said, we don't think that's the case, because the analogy would be if you turn the lights on in a bank and, you know, somebody's trying to rob it, putting the money in the sack. Once the lights are on, they're not going to keep putting the money in the sack.
Right.
They're going to stop trying to rob the bank and get away.
Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Right.
But never, that should not be an impediment to doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So are there any laws in place, like in Georgia that protect people who would go to like a higher power to report these issues?
Yeah. So Georgia whistleblower, I'm pretty sure is very specific to like state employees. I don't know that this is an area that I'm not very familiar with, and we don't deal with a lot.
Yeah, I think that if I remember from my employment law class from law school, because that's the last time I talked about whistleblowing or read about it, but I think that Georgia actually, I think, was very weak.
Yeah, and I think it's not private companies. I think it has to do with state employees
or statutes that are impacted by it.
Yeah,
I can't remember, but no, I guess we don't have a good. We'll have to get back to you on that one.
Well, and in Georgia, you can get fired for almost any reason as long as it's not a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. So you can't get fired for being a Christian, a woman, a man, Muslim, things like that. But if your employer says, hey, you know, you alerted the authorities that we were committing fraud, I'm not sure that Georgia protects you. They might. But, you know, again, yeah. you still got to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Have you noticed any changes in trends of mistreatment cases during your time practicing as an elderly neglect lawyer? Have cases gotten more, less?
I will say this, that in my experience on this, and we've been doing this for what, 5 or 6 years, 7 years?
Yeah, and I've been dealing with nursing homes, I guess, now for almost 16 years.
But in terms of the civil justice system, in terms of filing lawsuits, in terms of attempting to negotiate settlement of cases involving neglect or abuse, in my opinion, in my experience, the nursing homes, and particularly the insurance companies that would basically be writing the checks on behalf of these nursing homes, are fighting these cases harder now. So I think there's been, and this is just me, conspiracy theory, that I think that the industry is trying to push back against against cases to make it more difficult for attorneys particularly to bring claims for abuse and neglect. I think that they've dug in their heels and said, okay, even if it costs us a little bit of money, you know, in the short term, 3 to 5 years, you know, if we make it to where it's so difficult that most attorneys don't want to take these cases, we're going to win in the long run, which is, if I'm not mistaken, kind of the strategy for auto accidents in the 90s and the early 2000s.
And you also, I think that there's an argument to be made that you see a more of a prevalence of what's called arbitration clauses in admission agreements. And arbitration, if you're not familiar with it, is you guys have seen the daytime talk shows, right? Like
yeah.
Where Judge Judy or Judge Wapner or Judge Hatchett or any.
They haven't seen Judge Wapner. That was probably Judge, 30 years before
okay,
their time.
Okay, well, anyway.
Judge Judy.
Yeah, Judge Judy. So that's actually arbitration, where a single arbitrator or arbiter decides a case instead of going to a jury trial, which you have a right to under the 7th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And, of course, each individual state's constitutions allow you to have a jury trial in civil matters. And what will happen is these admission agreements will have in there an agreement to forego your 7th Amendment right to a jury trial and instead have the case heard by an arbitrator, which very traditionally is much more conservative and much friendlier to the nursing home. And it's in secret, right? So
it's confidential.
Yeah, it's confidential. So the public doesn't know what the outcome is. A lot of the facts that come up and the evidence that come up are kept from the public because of this arbitration agreement. Mm. And that's another area that the current administration has, in my view, failed residents. There was a lot of litigation back and forth during Obama's term and under Sylvia Burwell, who was the head of Health and Human Services, where they were fighting this in the Supreme Court and in the various district courts. All of that was dropped. Originally, what CMS, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, was saying was that if you're going to take money from us, you can't have arbitration agreements. It looked like the Supreme Court was going to side against them on that. But nevertheless, CMS stopped fighting this issue when the current administration came into power.
And you say that these types of arbitrations are more in favor of the nursing homes?
Absolutely. You got to think. I mean, if you're in a community, regardless of where you are, and a nursing home has, you know, neglected somebody and they died, if you take this to a jury trial, the public hears about it. Those 6 to 12 people listening on the jury hear about it. They go home and they tell their loved ones after the trial, and they're much more sympathetic as just individuals. Whereas if it happens in arbitration, the public doesn't really find out about it. And like the judges tend to be a lot more conservative in their awarding of damages. Mm-hmm. Money, in other words, and their awarding of money.
Mm. Okay, wow. All right. One question we have for you guys is, we were wondering why. So you guys have been working in this field for a while, and yeah. Your podcast now has over 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. The podcast of nursing home abuse. What made you guys want to take the step and start putting this information out there to be readily available for the public? And what has the reaction from the public been like?
I think that the main point for the podcast was to educate the public. Like, the audience that we have in mind are individuals that have a loved one in a nursing home in the state of Georgia, really across the country. So putting your and that's in fact who most of our clients are. Our clients generally, unfortunately, are not the residents. They're usually the daughter, the yeah. granddaughter of a resident who's been killed in a nursing home. So mm-hmm. the podcast was developed to answer questions that such a person would have. What would she ask herself, like, if she went in and saw her grandmother had a pressure wound, or if her grandmother wasn't receiving the appropriate medication? What are the questions that she would go home and type into Google? What are the signs of sepsis? What does a chemical restraint mean? And with that, Will and I developed episodes tackling those individual topics. So that's kind of the main purpose of that. And you know, like, you guys are liberal arts majors, you realize that you're going to go to your grave not knowing a bulk of the human knowledge. You could every day read all the books you could from the moment you open your eyes to the moment you close your eyes, and you're never going to know everything there is to know about everything. And that's the same with any area of the law. Even a niche area of the law like nursing home abuse and neglect, yeah. there's so much to know. And so this podcast functions as an education tool for us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have guests on and we learn something every week. We learn something new, even though this is our only thing we do and this is our specialty. So that's kind of what it was. It's a means to help our future clients or potential people out there, and to kind of help ourselves get better at this.
Yeah, you guys have educated me on this, both of us on this. The journalism that went into investigating nursing homes in the 70s. I can't wait to look into this because I'm very curious.
And we've learned so much from your podcast as well. Just listening to the guests speaking and mm-hmm. the questions you guys ask, it's like, I wish that I had access to this knowledge when my grandmother was in a nursing home herself. Mm-hmm. So I think you guys are doing a great job by putting this information out there.
And was she in one here in the States, or was that back in South Africa?
Yeah, she was in South Africa, but the system is, I think, very similar to the U.S.
And that's an interesting thing that you bring up, because we were actually just speaking with somebody in New Zealand yesterday.
Australia.
Oh, Australia.
Oh, we did Australia and New Zealand. Yeah, we had a guest. We had an episode with an Australian, an episode with a New Zealander.
And it's interesting to me to find out that there are very similar problems all the way on the other side of the world. It's not just the US, it's not just Georgia. It's disheartening that that's true, but it's still enlightening.
Yeah, it's definitely, we all have the same issues. I think America has the medical insurance that is very unique to the U.S.
Yes.
But yeah, as far as care and mistreatment goes, I think that is unfortunately a very universal problem that a lot of countries face. But yeah, I think to finish it all off.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you if there is a listener who is currently dealing with the possible mistreatment of a loved one in a nursing home, what advice would you have for them in regards to bringing the case forward and getting their loved ones the best care possible?
I think you can always start with speaking with a local attorney. And that doesn't mean that we talk with people all the time and simply provide sometimes direction where to go. And sometimes it's not us who can provide them assistance, but it's always just easy to call an attorney and say, hey, what do I do? A lot of times, honestly, most of the time, we send them to a different agency or a different regulatory body because we know where they should go. But yeah, I just call an attorney.
Yeah. So, and then, like I said, but I guess it would depend on the severity. Obviously, if there's something that's, if the person's life is in danger, you want to call the police. And then the next one down, you can call an attorney, you can call the ombudsman, call whoever the regulatory body is in that particular state. That's what we would say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for having this conversation with us.
Of course.
Thank you.
And it was very useful and helpful for our podcast.
And we definitely learned stuff from you guys as well. We have to look up the statute and all of these things.
And watch that movie. It's good movie.
Yeah, we'll shoot you an email with the link in it.
Have a good day. Good luck with all of your other podcast episodes that you're recording.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye. Well, I can tell you this right now, without any hesitation, without any, I don't know what's the word, without any reservation, that there was at no point while I was an undergrad student, I would have been up at 9:30 in the morning. No question. On a regular basis, it was 1 p.m. I would wake up.
Well, yeah, but that's because you were in a rock and roll band and you were going to gigs and staying up until...
And just lazy. But at any rate, these fine young ladies are doing a lot of good work, researching this stuff, writing about it, and they have a podcast. And as we have produced this episode, we don't have a name for it yet, but they're thinking about The Endless Fight as the name of the podcast that they're putting out.
Their podcast, yeah.
Their podcast.
And I think that's a great name.
Yeah. And if somehow before then, we'll put it in show notes. We'll have Gene shoot an email about it or whatever.
Yeah.
But... At any rate, this was an interesting episode to have us interviewed. So hopefully you guys found that somewhat informative.
And helpful.
I did. Helpful. I did. We found the name of that author we're going to go check out.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to conclude this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. New episodes of this podcast are available every other week on Monday mornings. You can catch them on our YouTube channel or on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or wherever you get your podcasts from, which would be Stitcher, Spotify. It's not iTunes anymore.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It's Apple Podcasts, I think.
Okay.
See, neither of us are Apple users, so we didn't know that, and it's been that way for probably 2 years.
Okay.
You can get them from Pod Puppies.
That's not a thing.
But it is a thing. And then, no, it's not. But at any rate, appreciate you having you, and with that, we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.